tell my inner child I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.
Hey, you guys, welcome back to another episode of Talks with Two. Today, I got a special guest, Mandy Brown, with us today. This is the fifth episode, you guys. I'm very excited to sit down and talk to her and introduce y'all to everything that she does. How you doing today?
I'm good. Tired, but good.
Why are you tired?
I'm up every day at 4:30. Yeah, and it's a Monday. The Mondays we Monday in.
It's the beginning of the week. And, man, we about to pop it off. We about to jump it off. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yes, well, my name is Mandy Brown. I am a licensed clinical mental health counselor, a certified life coach, social justice activist, mom, author.
Everything.
Exhausted. Whatever.
Everything. Okay. We got licensed counselor, certified life coach, mom. Okay, where should we start? Let's start with being a parent. Like, how is that for you?
It's ghetto.
Ghetto.
It is, but I enjoy it. I see why my parents kind of loved us at that small age, impressionable age. Like, when my kids were babies, it's just the new baby smell and everything. And as they get older, I'm like, damn, you are replicas of me and your dad. Right. It makes it ghetto because now I have to do what my parents did, but not as traumatized. Right. And I get to like redo it all in the way I wish I was handled. So right. It's good and bad. They try you on purpose. Yeah.
Here I am talking about I wish I had some kids. Never mind.
I mean, I'm not gonna say 0 out of 10 recommend. Maybe if you should start out with one and just stay there, you'll be fine. But you learn a lot about yourself as a parent. Like, I realized that my mom was very overstimulated with all of us, because when her and my dad got a divorce, it was like 5 of us in the house. So I see why her patience was thin, why she would yell like, why the meat not defrost, why the house not clean? Because right. I caught myself doing it. I'm like, I done told you to sweep up the spot 3 times. I'm looking at the same crumbs. Now we got to handle this differently.
Dang. So a house with 5 kids.
Yeah. Well, it's 11 of us total. Oh. And I'm the middle child. But at that time it was 5. So my parents had 2, my dad had 1 and my mom had 1, and then it had us.
Oh.
And then when they divorced, they just had separate ones, but we're all in the same space. So like intertwined, it made no difference. We all like went to like the same school a year apart. Yeah.
Oh, so y'all are very close.
Very close. So close that we are all in separate states.
All of y'all are in separate states?
Yeah, I mean, because we were all under each other in the same room, bunk beds. So, like, I know growing up, there were 2 bunk beds in a room. Mm-hmm. I'm, like, taking turns, waking up early to get to the bathroom to get ready for school. Mm-hmm. We were all going out at the same time. All same friends or different set of friends, but in the same space. It's a lot to be forced to be together.
Right.
And so when we all graduated back to back to back, we separated on top of what our parents did to us, of course, but like we wanted our own identities away from each other. And now that we had that, like, we're still best friends. We talk all the time. We have a group chat, but we like our space.
Yeah, I feel that. So can you walk us through your childhood and growing up?
So I am born and raised from Chicago.
Yeah. I'm about to touch down in Chicago.
You're going to have fun. I tell everyone, always go in the summertime for like the Wing Festival, the Silver Room Block Party.
You did.
And I went and it was...
chef's kiss.
Yes. There's no food like Chicago food. I give it to y'all down here. You know, y'all got some good stuff, but it's nothing like home. Okay.
Yeah, I'm finna have to, after this, I'm gonna need a list on where we should go.
I got you. I'm gonna give you a time frame when to go too.
Okay.
But growing up there, again, from a 2-parent household to a 1-parent household, all these kids in one space, it definitely was a lot. Definitely hard to find my own identity. My dad's side of the family was very big on colorism. We are mixed, so we're Black and Latino. Mm-hmm. And it was just that my other siblings are lighter than me. And then here's me and my twin, boom. And then everyone else is lighter than us after us.
Right.
And so my dad's mom didn't believe that we were our dads. So I remember getting a DNA test. And once it was proven I was my dad's child, she still treated me like I was like the gum on her shoe. Right. And my siblings getting all these new clothes, new shoes, hair done, spoiled. It took a toll. I didn't feel like I was like worthy enough to be a part of that family.
Mm-hmm.
But I am a daddy's girl, so my dad poured into me a lot because he picked up on it. So like everywhere I went, I'm like, I'm with my daddy. I'm doing sports and my dad would come to the sports games. I knew if I was doing science fair projects and honor roll, my dad would come to those award assemblies. So I made sure, which plays a role now, that I was a perfectionist to make sure my dad was always present, because like that was my person. That's my support system. And to the day, my daddy is really my best friend. And with my mom, I felt like I couldn't talk to her. She didn't hug us a lot. Again, always yelling and stuff. I didn't know it then, but I know it now.
Mm-hmm.
But I just felt really neglected, and I could not go to her for anything. Not even when I got my period. My dad came to my school, picked me up, got me pads, tampons, showed me how to use it, all that, and took me back to school. So, like, even though I lived with my mom, I had to find out about her, like, her background, everything through my dad because they grew up together. But now we have a good relationship. I mean, my mom is my dog for sure. But it took for me to become a parent for us to have that connection. Because once I graduated high school, I moved out like literally the day after graduation.
You was ready.
I was 16, turning 17, graduated early. I did dual enrollment. And at that time, that school, if you have like A's and B's, you don't have to take your finals. You already passed. So senior week, peace out. Went to graduation. And literally, I already had some of my stuff packed, but she called my dad after graduation. She was like, you can come get your child now. And had my stuff at the door. And I was like, okay, well, this is it.
So, let's hit on a relationship with your mother. So, how did that feel knowing that she, you know, treated you like that? Like, she was ready to, you know, just go ahead and get rid of you. Y'all never had an actual relationship. So how was that? How did that take a toll on you when, like, you were that age?
It hurt. I crazy enough, so you know how Facebook has those memories that play back. And so I look back at my statuses that popped up from 13, 14, 15 years ago, and they all have, like, suicidal ideation on it. And I can definitely say I was very depressed in my junior, senior year because she moved us further away from my dad. So I didn't have my support system. She remarried somebody that was mentally, emotionally, verbally abusive, all that stuff. And my room was right next to theirs. So, like, they're shouting and yelling, throwing stuff. And I'm just, like, sneaking out my window just to try to escape all that.
Mm-hmm.
And for her at that time, I felt like she was so lost in that relationship and trying to find herself past that and trying to find herself in motherhood. And again, like, our parents did the best they could with what they had. So her mom was neglectful.
Right.
And she kicked them out literally after graduation as well. And when my uncle got kicked out, which is the firstborn, he was murdered shortly after. So she just kind of picked up on it.
Yeah, so it was like a generational thing. So
yeah,
she seen her mom do that to them, and then she did that to you guys.
And it was hurtful. Like, I didn't understand it, but I was ready to go. Once I felt I was not worthy of her love as, like, 16, 17, I'm like, I'd rather just be on my own. I mean, what else did I do? I'm working already. I know I'm smart. I can get through school. I know I can pay bills. So I have my cell phone bill. I was giving her gas money and grocery stuff. I'm like, I can survive on my own. If I can't, like, my education will get me where I want to go. And I got into all the schools I wanted to. So I just had to pick a school and just pack up and leave. And that's exactly what I did.
Right. So what school did you pick?
So I picked Lynchburg College. It's in Lynchburg, Virginia. I got into everywhere I wanted to. I was going to Hampton with my cousin. We were going to the pharmacy program.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is with all HBCUs, they stingy with their money. And so me, I only needed, I want to say, about $10,000 left to pay. And my mom said automatically, I'm not signing off on a loan. I'm not helping you pay. This is what you want to go and what you want to do. You figure it out. So I picked a school that was still in Virginia, but gave me a sports scholarship, an academic scholarship, and gave me grants just because I was of color. And my whole year was paid off. I just had to get there. So.
Right. And how, dang, I lost my train of thought. That is crazy.
It's a lot.
That is crazy because not signing off on a grant.
She said if we ever forged her signature for a loan or anything for ourselves, she would send us to jail. She would pressurize and send us to jail. She made it very clear that when we leave her house, we are on our own. So that put me, I was already independent by force because I didn't feel like the love and connection with my dad's side to a certain extent, and then definitely not with her. So you forced me to be an adult. That's fine. Right. I will have to figure it out. I didn't know about bank accounts, loans, none of that stuff until I left her house.
Man, I know that's a lot. So how was your dad's reaction to like all of this going on? Like how she was treating you?
See, my papi a smooth dude, okay? So he when it happened, he said back, he was like, it's okay. I got her. I'm like, okay.
Daddy's girl.
Yeah, I mean, he did. He came down in his truck, packed up all my stuff, and took me back to Chicago, paid for my deposit to go to Virginia early in my dorm because at that point, it's a private school, so they will let you come early if you need to. Right. I got there a month early, and it was probably, like, the best decision like I made, but my dad was like, no matter what, even now, I still have you. So he just kept pouring into me.
Right. So how did you find out about the grant to get and stuff? Like, who helped you?
Nobody.
So you found it on your own.
I used to sit for, like, I remember sitting for 2 weeks straight after I got all the schools, like Rutgers, Drake, Carthage, NIU, Baylor, St. John's, everybody. I sat and was like, who's going to offer me the most money? And if something's missing, where can I get this money from? And it was the minority grant that I was missing that gave me, like, $15,000.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's pretty smart to be able to go find that information. Still to this day, I couldn't go find none of that stuff on my own. Like, but it's really out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. When I'm first generation, too, so my parents couldn't help me.
Right. So you say you got an academic scholarship. What sports did you play?
I did cheerleading and basketball. So I got in for cheerleading, and then
they give stuff for cheerleaders?
Yes.
My bad.
We were good.
I be sleeping on the cheerleaders, man. But nah, that's good. So at what point did you play basketball?
After I left Lynchburg, when I moved back to Chicago, I decided to go to Kishwaukee College, which is their JUCO connected to Northern Illinois University. When I went there, I did basketball there. I already knew the coach, knew some of the players. I had friends there already. It was pretty easy kind of just to walk on. And they gave me a grant for the semester to see how I'd do it. And it kept going.
Right. Okay. Little sports thing going on.
A little bit. When I got to NIU, I was like, I'm relaxing.
Why you ain't wanna do the sports?
Because when I'm average height and at NIU I knew I really wanted to like just focus on school. And I was a parent, then I became a parent that time too. So focus on school, parenting, get into the community as far as like what clubs I wanted to join. Activist stuff. So I did join like the Black Association I did a minor in African American Studies, was under the African American Center that we had on campus, and did the S Plan mentorship program. So I took freshmen, sophomores under my wing, even though I was new. Like, I just wanted to get involved in the space. I wasn't worried about hooping. Like, my academics at that point paid for my college.
Paid for everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel you. So, as far as like your parents' divorce.
Yeah.
How did that change your perspective and outlook, you know, on life? Like, seeing your parents, you know, divorce, I'm sure they was in two different households. And how was that?
It sucked. So when they told me they were getting a divorce, my mom took all of us upstairs while my dad was downstairs eating Chinese food, watching martial arts. That was our thing. And we're upstairs and she's like, you know, mommy and daddy don't love each other anymore. We're going to move. But daddy still loves you, but they don't love each other.
Right.
And so I'm like, my daddy love me, bro. Okay, y'all ain't gonna go nowhere. denial. Because I think I was like in kindergarten, first grade, like denial. And mind you, they were married, divorced, remarried. So this was like the final divorce.
So they done already did this before.
But it didn't hit me though, because like I was super young, like a baby. So it didn't really matter. But I remember everything after, like the family pictures, the wedding in the backyard. Mm-hmm. Like all of us have a house. We got a dog now.
Right.
So it felt like
a home. Like, we had a family home that my grandfather had bought for my mom and my dad, and we were all in it. Like, it felt great. And so for it to separate, I know personally it took me a minute. Even though I was young, I felt like, where's my daddy?
Right.
Where's my daddy? Like, you were just here. Where's my daddy? But my dad was very present. I mean, every weekend, answering the phone, coming to pick us up, still going skating, still coming to our stuff. So he didn't miss a single beat within anything that we were doing.
Right.
It's just we knew we were separate households. But if I came in the house, I want to go to my daddy's house. So that bad. So it wasn't really a gap, but I know when I needed my dad there for those long days with my mom and he couldn't get me because of his job, that's when it like hit the most.
So what did he do for work?
So my dad was a police officer at the time, Chicago Police Department. Ooh. Before then, he had multiple jobs. He worked in a morgue, did security, worked for Cook County Sheriff Department, but law enforcement was definitely like his thing for sure.
Right. So he wasn't able to spend as much time with you on that police.
No, he did like a night shift, I want to say. It was like from 9 to maybe like 3 or something in the morning. And then mm-hmm. it shifted from about 1 to about 9 o'clock at night. And at that time, he could be in the patrol car, kind of shoot over to where we were, or we would go to his spot. So he was at Ogden Park, which is on 63rd area. Inglewood.
Wait. 63rd.
Everybody does it. But Ogden Park, and he was posted up there. And so that also played a role in who I am today. My dad definitely had a compromising background in the beginning growing up. But once he chose to be one of those protectors and leaders in the community, mm-hmm. He's just a regular hood dude on the other side and still pouring into the youth and keeping them out of trouble.
Right.
Yeah.
So that was the good part. Because I'm like, hold on, you said 63rd. Now I don't. You heard a couple things about 63rd, and was like, oh my God, when I go down there, I can't wait to ask people about 63rd.
It's not as deep as y'all make it.
Okay, because that's what I wanted to know. You know, down here in Nashville, because we'll tell you the worst projects is down here, but to somebody that really don't know, it's a lot of good parts down here in Nashville.
Very much so.
So that's the thing that I'm excited when I go up to Chicago. Like, so the lifestyle, like, how's the lifestyle down here?
So, to me, down here, this is a piece of cake compared to how I grew up. I mean, like, you're like, oh, there's a shooting over here. I'm like, okay. I mean, but y'all can walk outside. That was fine. But me being in the community, I see how, if you grew up, born and raised here in those areas, how traumatic it can be.
Yes,
but coming from where I'm coming from and how I've grown, I've been shot, I've been stabbed, I've been hit with a brick, I've been in a dry bath.
Wait,
so
hold
like,
up. You said you've been what?
Yes. So.
Hold up. Let's rewind right quick. You've been shot, you've been stabbed.
Yes.
Hit with a brick.
We've had a lot of
things
going on in our youth, okay?
Okay, hold up. Because I need to hit on that. Yeah. So you got shot.
Mm-hmm.
Where?
I got grazed in my neck, and then I got stabbed in the back of my arm. And then when I was with my brothers and they were fighting, someone grabbed a brick and hit me in the side of my head. And I still had that dent there.
So was this in Chicago?
Mm-hmm. Everything in Chicago. Nowhere else. It ain't down here.
What?
I live peacefully here.
Okay, so.
Yeah.
So explain like the mental process through that, like getting shot and stabbed.
So those were two different times. Getting stabbed was older, but getting shot was younger and like high school era. Mm-hmm. That played a role in my depression because mm-hmm. like I said, I did have strong intrusive thoughts and I was posting statuses like, why doesn't God take me away?
Right.
So I'm thinking like, that's one of the moments right there.
Right.
And then when it didn't happen, I'm like, what happened?
Right.
But it just gave me another chance to be here, but it did like push me to like not wanting to be back in those spaces. Like I moved, obviously.
So it was an environment thing?
Yeah.
Okay. So what about the incident like getting stabbed?
College.
That happened late college. So you went through some traumatic in high school and then I mean, not even just traumatic, but like violently. So how did the
the college stabbing was like random. So it was a college party, and at the time, this is my ex, also my daughter's father.
Mm-hmm.
His friend was like the one who threw all the parties on the block in Greek Row.
Mm-hmm.
And so at this point, the man is drunk and playing with one of them martial arts knives. and throws it, and it hits the back of my arm. Like, it just stays. And I turn around, I'm like, I know this is not what I think it is. I know this is not what I think it is. We ain't talked since. And ask me what he doing in life.
What?
All right, no. I went to the hospital, got stitches.
Yeah. And that was that.
That's it.
So all this stuff is accidental?
Chicago definitely is a funny place where you can accidentally get hurt in any capacity.
See, when I got shot, it was an accident. But, like, dang, shot? Stabbed? Mm-hmm. Man, that...
But that brick, no, that was on purpose. That was on purpose.
That was on purpose.
That was intentional.
That was intentional. Y'all just down there getting into fights.
It's not, it wasn't on purpose. So most of the fights I did get into, of course, hand to hand, was because of my twin. So my twin at that time.
And you have a twin brother or sister?
He's my brother now, yeah, my brother.
Okay.
And at that time, when I was on the other side, my twin was gay.
Right.
But was trying to hide it. And a lot of people at that time, kids are cruel, picking on them. And so our high school and middle school, all schools we went to, small. And everyone knew where my classroom was. Mm. And so this particular time, there's gym class right at the end of the hall and my math class at the beginning of the hall.
Right.
All right, here's... Like, they picking on Chris. They picking on Chris. I run out of class. My teacher couldn't even get two words out of me. I take down off the hall. Mink. No question. No question. Because at that point, like, again, we didn't have a safe space at home. We come to school with our friends. Yeah, we trying to learn, but we chilling. And you got the audacity to pick on my twin? Oh, you going to catch something.
Yeah.
And it was his hands. There was no other explanation. God. There was no talking because everybody knew, like, Chris was introverted. Chris was shy and did not... tall, but was not gonna fight you, not gonna argue with you, immediately shut down. Like, I'm rah-rah, and Chris is like, nah.
Right.
So, here I come every single time, and the school just figured it out, so I would just get in school or detention, but never out of school, because they knew what the purpose was. Like, I'm not fighting just to fight for fun, because I don't care that much. But the moment you mess with a piece of me, oh, we gonna fight.
Hey, that twin love, that's...
It's strong now. And we feel it too. And then I texted Chris the other day. I was like, you straight? And he was like, get out my head. I'm like, no, something's up. Like, I know something's up with me, but what's up with you?
Right. And we so just start twins really have that connection. So y'all identical?
Fraternal.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I want to get into the transition to speak about, you know, you being a suicide survivor.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little bit of insight on that situation?
So that was when I actually did attempt my senior year of college. Mm-hmm. I was a mom of two at that point. I had my oldest daughter and then my youngest daughter with my then ex. And I was doing a lot. Like, like I said, I was involved, but I was overly involved, right?
Right.
And I also placed my sorority and stuff. And it was just like, my hands aren't everything, plus school, plus parenting. And I was looking for him at that point to just, like, carry me, bro. Like, I just had the baby. I'm exhausted. I'm trying to retract from these roles so I can just finish out and graduate. We were getting married 2 months later. Like, everything was set up. And so I noticed so much neglecting him, pulling back, and then infidelity started sliding in. And you know, at that point, Facebook, they'll let you know when you like somebody's status, when you comment on somebody's status, come on somebody's picture. And I would see it. And he would tell girls how beautiful they are. And these are girls that are like, no kids, like nothing. And how beautiful they are, and we should go do this. I realized, like, his overtime wasn't overtime. And he started slipping up. And then he just said one day, like, you know, like, I want to see what I can do outside of this. Like, I want to get with this girl.
So he told you that?
Yeah. I mean, me and him now, we're still very blunt. We're great friends. We co-parent extremely well. But we were blunt then and we're blunt now. And Spencer was like, you know, like, I'm just not feeling the dynamic. I want to be single. Like, let's just separate. Right. Said nothing about co-parents. Just the relationship. Let's separate. He was like, he felt like he wasn't getting enough attention because my hands were everywhere. I'm like, we're getting married in 2 months. I'm moving back to you in a couple months. I'm asking you to be patient because I'm trying to wrap up the rest of my time. Right. And it wasn't enough. Like, he's like, now, very impatient. He wants what he wants. And so he left me for another girl who was in a different organization. And that made me crumble, because at that point he wasn't seeing our girls enough. He had bills that he was supposed to cover, didn't cover them, so put me behind. And then rent piling up, and I'm just like crumbling, and finals are around the corner. I said, screw this. Literally, like, postpartum depression is so real. And it gave me no time to recover, because again, he didn't carry me afterwards. Like, it was just like me falling after falling after falling after falling, and being strong for everybody, because what everyone expected, and right. No one was there for me the way I needed. And so I literally, like, I already had a will, because I thought I was gonna like die when I gave birth, because it was that bad.
Right.
But had my will on the table, had my pain medications that I had from my last surgery in my room. I put my kids up front, told them to watch TV, and locked my door.
And that's when you tried to...
Yep. I texted my sorority chat, and I was like, I love you guys, but, like, I'm done. The girls are up front. My door is locked. Do not try to break it down. Don't even knock on it. It's not going to open. The front door is open. He can have them. Like, I'm done. And I, like, took all them pills and, like... was a hydrocodone at the time. They were strong pain pills, because I sweat out medication. And just like felt myself drifting, and I could barely remember part of it, but I could hear like my best friend Sierra, which is also my ace, like screaming. I can hear.
So she was in your house?
She came busting. She busted in the room. I could hear her screaming. I could hear, but I couldn't see, couldn't feel nothing. I could just hear. I could hear her screaming, and like she was like, I'm shaking her, but she's not waking up. And then I heard other screams, but like it didn't click. Like, I could feel myself like drifting off. Right. And then all of a sudden, like, I'm waking up in the hospital, like with Narcan or whatever, drip, just processing everything, and everyone's like around me in my room. I was like, okay, I'm here.
That was the reaction.
That was my reaction, because I was really ready was so ready to go. I was so tired of being strong, so tired of being overlooked, so tired of being downplayed, so tired of feeling unloved and neglected. I'm like, screw this. I'm exhausted. When I say I was exhausted, I mean like I had no energy to even cook. Like, didn't even nothing.
Right.
So he I got admitted, of course. They had the girls. He was supportive. He was like, you know, you just get better or whatever. But, like, he was still doing his thing.
Right.
And, of course, my dad being my super daddy, coming to the rescue.
Right.
So,
I don't mean to interrupt you, but how was your mom's reaction? You
know, my mom, I don't think she found out till later, because my dad kind of shut her out, too, once I left the space.
Uh-huh.
He didn't really have a relationship with her. And I've been trying to get my mom involved in my life at that time, but she just kept letting me down. So he didn't talk to her.
Right.
She didn't know until after. And the crazy part is my twin tried on the same day.
Wait.
Yeah. But my twin was in California at the time in the military, dealing with racism, getting abused. It was an assault. It was a lot. And, like, we were just suffering.
So you and your twin
didn't even know.
Suicide on the same day.
Didn't even know. I didn't know until, like, 2 months later when I finally told Chris. And Chris was like, what?
So you told your twin 2 months later?
Yeah, because I had to process it. Then I had to go back to being a mom. It's like, I need to get my stuff together to figure out like how I'm gonna navigate. Like, I'm here, I'm still here. Like, now I gotta figure out like what to do with them, how to co-parent with him, pick up the pieces, pick up these bills.
Reality came back,
smacked me in the face. And then when I was able to be vulnerable, we were like, what the fuck? Like, you too? And she was like, yeah, me too. Mind you, that of course that brought us closer. It was like, yo, we need to like check on each other.
Right. Like, yeah.
But yeah.
So I know you went through a domestic violence situation. Yeah. Was that before or after the suicide attempt?
After?
Mm-hmm. Was it the same guy?
No. So this is a different guy. So Spencer is my girl's father, Chicago. And like I said, we co-parent fine. We are friends. Right. There's no issues. After that incident, he took my mental health very seriously. He does weekly check-ins still to this day. He like, skip the kids. How you doing? You need some gas money? You need some food? Because I know you ain't cooked on Friday. I'm like, stop peeping my life.
Right.
So we're fine. This particular person is actually my son's father. And my son's father knew everything I went through in my past. I mean, literally top to bottom from birth
to all till the way
that day. And he knew about my perinatal and postpartum depression, knew about all the abuse and stuff prior. So when it came to him doing that naturally, I'm like, why?
Right.
I told you how it broke me, what it did to me, and you're putting me back in that place.
Right. So, what was your mental like at that? Like, so going through everything that you went through in the past, I'm talking about from seeing your parents divorce, from the violence that happened, getting shot, getting stabbed, going through the suicide attempt, and now it's the domestic violence relationship. Like, how was that? That seemed like a lot.
Mind you, this is a gap. It's not back to back. But in between the gap, I felt great. I healed. Right. Like I said, we gained a better relationship. I now have my mom. Like, me and my siblings cool. I'm in my social work career, education career. Mm-hmm. Like, everything's on a good trajectory. I'm finding out my purpose. That's when I started my program, everything. And then I get a relationship with him. In the beginning of the relationship, I mean, it was perfect. Like, we were friends before, and, like, everything was fine. But the more I got into the relationship, and then we found out we were pregnant, there was happiness there, and I started overlooking stuff, because at that point, I'm just trying to focus on my pregnancy. Because, again, prior with my daughter, I had, like, blood infusions, like, everything. Like, I was, like, down bad after that surgery. So when it came to him, and I got pregnant with my son, it just kind of declined after that.
Right.
Like, it was like, you're not good enough. I'm seeing text messages from people like, do you know this is what he's doing outside of you? Do you know he's talking about you in this manner? So it's like a whole smear campaign. Unprovoked, because in my mind, I'm thinking we're fine. Like, we just we went shopping for prenatals. We bought baby stuff. Like, we're talking about how we're going to do a gender reveal, how we're going to do the ultrasound stuff. I'm still paying bills. I'm trying to plan dates. And when it hit, like, month two, I found out he was cheating. He stepped out. He, ugly girl at that, stepped out.
You finna get talked to, talked about.
Hey, I mean, look. I'm gonna set it out the camera. But I remember this day, because I asked him, I was like, you know, that Michael Myers movie had came out, the last one where Michael Myers, like, died, whatever, right? Uh-huh. Halloween, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, this came out, let me take you out on a date, because I know, like, Spencer said he felt neglected during a pregnancy. Let me fill in that gap with him. We already had a good relationship prior to the pregnancy. I want to keep it up. I want to make sure you feel catered to, because I know you're going to cater back to me. He was like, no, I'm going to hang out with my brother and do this and this and this. Come to find out, he asked the girl on a date to that movie and took her. And he's like, you know, I'm bringing this. He's like, he said, I remember the text message. He was like, I've seen you on social media. It looks like you've been having a rough time, and I felt like I just needed to pour into you. Let me take you out on this date. Pour into her? She's having a rough time. I'm pregnant. So after that, I'm just trying to, like, keep it all together. Remember, still in the program, still trying to cater to him. But the more I did that, the harder I was failing. And then found out about some strippers. Yeah. Videos got sent to me.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
Okay. And then more messages got sent to me. There was like, he was like, Mandy's not going to know. She don't come outside like that. What a hoe's that, blah, blah, blah. And at that time, I'm not outside. I'm in school. I'm finishing up my program. I'm trying to get this to the back, okay? I'm not worried about partying. That's not who I am now. And so when I saw that, that broke me even more. And so I called him out on it. You know, he fine for a couple days, and then go back to the smear campaign. And the more and more I tried, the more and more it just clashed. Until we did our
pregnancy announcement for Christmas, because I found out I was pregnant like in October.
Right.
So Christmas, we decided to announce it to his family, and you could see the disgust on his parents' face, and I did not know why. And she was like, get rid of it. His mom's like, get rid of it. Abort it.
Like, they didn't want it?
They did not want it. And I was shocked, because she said, thank you guys for the Christmas gifts. I wish I had something better. And then was like, she needs to get rid of it. And I'm like, okay. She knows something I don't know. Called a family meeting, come to find out, he's been running back to her consistently talking about how unhappy he is, how he wanted to leave, and that he was going to leave me at the end of the year. So I'm like, okay, well, excuse my French, but let me fall down some steps then, because why am I carrying your child? And so I'm sitting there, and she's telling me, she's like, if you're going to keep it, don't think I'm happy that we're going to go shopping or do all these things, because you don't need to keep the baby. You need to get rid of it. So I'm constantly hearing that. And then after that, literally more downhill, to the point where the final straw for me was when he cheated with this girl younger than me. And right. The girl was still living with her boyfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. And them two were messing around. And so the final straw was, apparently that young man committed suicide in his apartment due to their actions. I don't play with suicide.
Okay, yeah. So let me get this straight. Yeah. So
they were messing around.
Was messing with another girl, and she had a boyfriend.
Ex-boyfriend. They still resided together in their apartment.
So they was living together. So he was cheating on you with a girl, and she was living with her dude.
Yes.
So the guy that she was dating committed suicide of them.
He exposed them on social media. Mind you, my antennas are not up. They're not up. I'm focused. Like, I'm trying to figure out what I can do to make it right. You're making me feel less than. I'm feeling all these old emotions. I'm getting depressed. I'm getting anxious. I'm not holding down food. And on top of that, like, I'm sick as well. And so I'm trying to figure out what's wrong. And so while all this is going on, I'm oblivious to it all until 2 weeks later. All of it gets exposed. The screenshots from all the pages they're posted to, the newspaper article of him dying, voice recordings and videos in them together. Like, it was so much. I was ready to off myself right there, quite honestly. I'm like, I'm pregnant. I'm very pregnant, and this is what we're doing.
So at what point was it domestic violence between you two?
So after that, after I called it off, further down the line, went into preterm labor, right? Mm-hmm. And so gave birth to my son. And that first night in the hospital, he's upset because he can't do the drugs he wants to do. And so me, you made a promise you're not going to smoke pills, shrooms, nothing, because we got a kid now. All that shit is off the table.
Right.
And so he starts yelling and getting aggressive with me in the hospital. I'm in the bed, emergency C-section, in the bed, and you're upset because you can't do drugs and can't be around me and the baby, because I'm telling you no. Mm. Okay. The day we got home, he still argues about that and gets in my face. Mind you, emergency section. And I'm in the living room, and he's all emotional. And I'm like, you need to leave. I do not feel safe. You need to get out of my house. He gets up, make me, and shoves the shit out of me to the wall.
Right after y'all came
right after. I could barely walk. I mean, like, the second day in the hospital, you can hear me scream because I finally get feelings in my leg and in my uterus, and my uterus is like full and the catheter is out. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like my stitches are about to burst because they never told me to get up to use the bathroom. I didn't know the catheter was out. Mm-hmm. So like, I can't walk. I'm numb. I'm exhausted. You weren't up at night. You went out and did whatever.
Right.
And so you come back and you're mad because I'm holding you accountable to the promise you made me, and you put your hands on me. Okay. So I call the cops. I tell the cops, like, look, it's verbal. Just get him out the house. Because working in the system, I know what it can do to a black man. I'm not even on that type of time. At this point,
right?
Like I said, when I left you while pregnant, I just want to co-parent. You ain't got to come to the house. I'll put him in a basket and put him on your doorstep. You don't got to come to the house. Like, that's how bad it was. The fact that you have known my whole life and was utmost disrespectful the entire time. Top to bottom.
Right.
You and your family. and this is the first thing you do because you can't get what you want.
So did it happen like more than just that time?
Yes, it happened more than that time.
So that was that time the last straw?
No.
Or it?
Nope. So that was my mental last straw was when all that cheating stuff happened. I told him I want to be single. I want to co-parent. I told him get all your things out of my house. Whatever baby stuff you bought, it is yours. I'll keep my baby stuff. We just gonna have to co-parent because I didn't sign up for a life like that.
Right.
I didn't sign up for you to bash me or whatever case may be. And you and I remember it's recorded too. I remember he said, like, you tried everything, you done everything, you love me and all these things, and I just can't get right for you.
Right.
So let me leave. And I stood on leaving. As soon as I had my son, that was my exit plan. I'm not going back to you. But that was the first time. The second time was when a lot of people didn't know I was pregnant. I kept it hidden. I felt isolated. I felt ashamed, like, obviously, from that point. The second time was my son turned a month old. And, of course, I'm in therapy at that point. And I announced on social media, like, I have a baby. Like, it's my little son.
Right.
I showed the maternity photo shoot, everything. Like, I've never posted nothing about being pregnant until that day.
Right.
This man comes back to my house later that night because he was going to visit our son. He puts my son down. He was like, so you ready to talk about this post? What about it?
So.
The post said that my pregnancy was not what I thought it was. I thought we were going to be a family together, but we're not. But look what I created. Like, my body went through the utmost pain. I caught COVID twice. I'm sick. And you left me, okay? Right. Look what my body was able to create through all that BS.
Right.
This white little baby, okay?
Right.
So, at that point, he was mad. He was talking about the post. And he got in my face again. Right. And so, I told him to leave. And he told me to shut up and make him.
Again?
Yep, again. So, this time, I just got up. Like, I got my legs back now. You're not finna do nothing. I just got up. I went to open the door. And he goes, sorry, baby. And he picks up our baby and he said, is this what you left me for? This is what you're leaving me for? The loudest scream came out of my damn mouth. Put my son down and get out. Get out. He like, I get out when I'm ready. And walks around and holds him. Like, mocking me, smiling. Like, and you can hear my son screaming. And me, I'm not doing it. I'm just about to go. I'm not finna touch you. Not doing nothing. My phone in my room. Just leave. He finally put my son down. Did the whole sanitizer thing. Looked me up and down. And elbowed me. He like, yeah. I slammed the door so fast and locked it. He started banging on the door, banging on the window, trying to break it down. And I was like, you need to leave before I call the cops. At that point, I got his family involved and told them, right, y'all either gonna handle this or I'm going to press charges. Ask me, did they handle it?
No, they didn't.
Nope. And the final straw was we went to a probate at FIS because I'm SG Rowe. My player's son is a Kappa. Their chapter had a probate. Mm-hmm. And he shows up to the probate. And me and my brother was there. Not my twin, but my other brother, my god brother. Mm-hmm. They have beef. We're not thinking he's going to show up. I just came to be safe. They had beef. They're arguing across the gym. And my brother's like, come out sad. Like, any dude. Like, you already hit my sister. Come out sad.
It's his twin.
No. It's this the other thug, brother. This the...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I was like, hold up. Twin again?
Nah. That's when twin was out of state.
Okay. Twin came a week after that, though.
Oh, okay.
So but this is my brother. Okay. This is my brother. He like, come outside, come outside. So he walking towards the door, and I'm holding the phone. I'm like calling my guy. I'm like, she had my son at times. Like, you know, I'm finna leave. We coming home. It's going left, da 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 da. And all I feel is my hair get yanked back and my face get mushed, and I get scooped up by another member of the fraternity, and I'm screaming like this, like he just hit me, like you just hit me.
So it was him.
Yes, and it's caught on video. At that point, I called the cops outside. We pressing charges. We shutting all this down. You touch me in public. Your problem is the man walking outside that wants to address you for doing some whole stuff. But you touch me.
Right.
I pressed charges. I did a order protection for all me and my kids. And that just set the pace after that. I'm like, I'm done.
Oh, no.
And I don't regret it. Like, the goal was to protect myself after I left you, but you kept coming back and antagonizing me and talking about me, and then you touched me again, but in a public space, and you thought it was sweet because right. you around your friends. No.
Nah. That's over with.
No.
I ain't gonna lie. That's...
Whew. It's a wrap.
That's a wrap.
And yes, my brother was heated at that. He was like, I told you to come touch me. You hit her again? Yeah.
Whew.
Mm-hmm.
So... I know, fast forward now, yeah. you know, we talked about you being a professional counselor and a certified life coach. What role does your past play in you being able to help others that's going through the situations that you went through? Like, what role does it play?
So it plays a relatable role. I do have clients from all backgrounds who are the victims and who are the abusers. Right. Surprisingly enough. Mm-hmm. And it helps me see both sides. It helps me empathize and help them get along their journey in every aspect. And I'm comfortable on both sides because
right.
I've seen it. And the biggest thing is that they trust me because I've already experienced those things. And I'm very right. open about it. Like, some clinicians, you know, they want to have a wall and not be as
right.
vulnerable. I don't care. Because at the end of the day, I'm still a human. With these credentials, I'm still just a human being. Right. So the only way people are comfortable in certain spaces is if they know that they can trust you because you experience certain things.
Right. Mm. So... question, and mm-hmm. this is for the listeners, and this is also for me.
Yeah.
So how do you balance being the go-to person for others and still being able to preserve your energy? Because I feel like I'm battling that, because I ain't gonna lie, as yeah. soon as I said let's talk about it, trust me, everybody want to talk about it outside this podcast. Like, it's like I opened up,
you opened up Pandora's box.
I opened it up because I didn't realize how much my friends and people that I talk to needed it. But it's times where sometimes I got to turn that off because we take a lot of things in, mm-hmm. and now I got to release it. But I'm having trouble. I'm struggling. So I'm asking this question for me,
you
and for anybody who may be listening. So how do you balance that?
So I do decompression sessions, right? Mm-hmm. So say I'm having back-to-back sessions. The moment I get a break, that's the moment I shut everything off.
Right.
My computer is off, so I'm not looking at notes. I'm not thinking about clients. My music on. I got my favorite snacks. I'm going for a walk. I'm doing something to just decompress and go back into me. Because right. the more I pour out, the more I need to pour into myself to give. Even if it's right. just a listening ear, because I do have clients who don't want feedback. They just want you to hush up and listen.
Right.
And that's perfectly fine. But I need some energy to sit back and listen, because some of the stuff you're saying is either very traumatic or some BS. So, yeah, some of it be like some mess. So I do that. And then on the way home, before I hop into mommy mode, I have a playlist.
Right.
I love music. So I'm in my car rapping like I'm a drug dealer from the corner, okay? Like, I have another life in my mind.
Right.
And it just helps kind of get back in like that. You see me dance all the time. Get back in that wiggly fun right. mode. But if there is a case that is I can't snap out of too quickly, I will wait to decompress when I get my kids. At that point, their playlist is on. They're wanting right. my attention, and they're wanting food and everything. So I can divert my attention to them and pour into them. And mm-hmm. honestly, it pours back into me to where I can let that client case go off my head for a while.
Right.
But you do have to have boundaries when it comes to people pouring into you. Just like as a friend, you got to have like a shut off time or right. just like a shut off amount. So the more they're telling you, like, all right, that's enough. Like, let's talk right. about this later.
Right, because they'll keep on, man, if I don't say nothing, they'll just keep on going on yeah. and on and on. And some of the stuff really be draining, because I'm the person you come to, I give you advice just based off experience mm-hmm. or what I done learned, and then you still coming with the same
BS. Thing
as if you didn't listen to what I told you the first time. So now it becomes draining. I don't feel like I know everything, but I done been through some stuff, and I done grew, and I done learned. So yeah. I'm only just telling you, what I know to try to help you.
Well, but, that person gonna keep bumping their head. That's when yeah. you say, and I have a person like that. I like, look, if you're gonna talk about this topic, hop off the phone right now.
Right.
And they'll be like, well,
if you're going to talk about this topic that we always talk about, hop off the phone right now. I don't have the capacity to pour into that. Right. I always say that. I don't have the capacity. If someone calls me and I'm exhausted, and I'd be like, look, I don't have the, and it's an automatic, I don't have the capacity to talk about nothing right now. You can text me, and that gives me the power to respond back when I want to respond back. But when it comes to stuff like that, we're not talking about that. Talk about something else.
Okay. Yeah. I really need to take your advice. What do you do when it becomes to people that's feeding, you know, off of your energy, because they know you have that healing spirit and that healing energy, that they just feel so entitled to it. I mean, me, I just be saying like, bro, that's not my, you know.
Yeah.
This, I do this on the podcast. I do. You know, I do this on the podcast, but I'm still human too. Like, y'all not understanding how much I have to
deal with yourself.
Dude.
Like, this is trauma nothing. Even my story, your reactions, how your body is responding, it's like, ooh.
Right. It's so like, oh my God.
And it's okay. So what you just say, I just don't have the capacity. Or again, those boundaries. So just say, which I do to my family, here are my business hours and here's what I charge. If you would like to talk about something in depth, feel free to book and I will send you an invoice.
Okay.
So spin it. If you say like, hey, if someone wants to talk less in depth like that, be like, well, I do have a podcast. And if you're wanting to talk more, I can give you some mental health professionals that you can speak to on the side and pay for, or I can charge you myself as a coach.
Right. Okay, I'm dead ass finna take that fucking advice, because Lord help me. I've been praying for me, because boy, I just opened it up. Like, what I told the universe I wanted to do this, and the universe really
responds back every time.
So now it's just like, okay, wait.
I'm not ready.
Slow down. I'm not ready. So. Yes, I definitely need that advice, and I know other people out here will need that advice too. What lessons have you learned, you know, from your past that you imply working, you know, with your clients?
So I always tell my clients that unconditional love does not mean unconditional tolerance, and it doesn't mean when you forgive somebody they still have access to you, because you can shut that off. So with that being said, I believe in boundaries 1,000 times, whether it's for me, my kids, work wise, I believe in it, because they're for me. It's not to do it to hurt the next person. It's just to protect me and to make myself comfortable and to make sure like I'm not overdoing it and depleting myself. And so I tell my clients that every step you take is going to be a new devil, a new lesson, but a new boundary you need to create.
Right.
So.
Whew, dang, that is good advice.
Yeah, everybody does not deserve access to the new healed you. All because, and I'm a woman of faith, so I can forgive you for me and for the situation and hand you up to God. But that don't mean you got to come back. you are not a boomerang. Stay where you at.
Right. Ooh. So that was definitely good advice. I feel that.
Yeah.
And I'm so mad because we running out of time, and I haven't even got into your professional life, but it's okay, because this one we learned, you know, this was personal, so we gonna have to do a round two. But before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to share with our listeners, or any advice that you would like, you know, to give anyone that went through anything that you went through?
Trauma happens. Healing is not linear. So don't think it's a race to hurry up and get to a finish line that's a never-ending finish line.
Is it?
All because you heal from one thing, it's going to be a trickling effect. You need to heal from something else. Healing is not linear. You're going to dump and go back up and dump and go back up. It's just normal. Right. And therapy does help. But remember not to be codependent on your therapist or those sessions. We are just there to help you navigate those things, to help you get a blueprint, to help you answer some questions, but your journey is in your hand. That's not up to me. Now, I may want to fight them demons for you because I adore you that much, but I can't want you to want something and to be something more than you want to, because then that's when the frustration comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So get help, get therapy. What you went through, it happened. You can grow from it. You can build resilience from it. You can be hypervigilant, because I know sometimes I am as well.
Right.
But
that event or that moment does not stop your life at all. If anything, it helps you, helps build you. It sucks. It sucks right. that it happens, but it helps you grow into the person that you know that you're not going to fall back to time and time again.
Y'all hear that? We're going to highlight. Yeah. We're going to highlight that because I feel like Trey everybody. Like I feel like everybody can hear that. And where can we find you? Where can our listeners find you and get in contact with you?
You can find me at my church. But, yeah, you can find me at my church. We are One City at McGavin High School on Sundays. If you need some. Yes, I love my pastor. Hollis Lord, he be checking me every Sunday. Like I have my spiritual counselor and my physical counselor, and it's be like a jab every week, and I'd be like, get out my life. But otherwise, you can find me on Instagram at Mandy B, also known as The Relatable Counselor. My Instagram name is The Relatable Counselor. You can find me on TikTok now, finally, under that name. YouTube under The Relatable Counselor. It will be under the Thinking Corner as well. I do have a LinkedIn, so I'm pretty much everywhere. If you type in my name, Mandy Brown, on Google, I'm gonna pop up.
So y'all definitely better tap in, and please stay tuned to get the professional side of her being a professional counselor and certified life coach, because we definitely gonna dive into the professional side on the next episode. So that'll be a wrap. Episode 5 with Talks with Two. Thank you for sitting down with me today.
You're welcome.
All right, y'all. We out. Stay tuned. In the chat, I'm sorry for everything you had to go through. It started as a child. I wish that I was stronger in situations that I had to go through. I'm trying to press it now.